kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
So how was your Christmas?
Fucking amazing.
Why?
I'm sitting here with a brand new copy of Forza Horizon 3 next to me, which is awesome.
Ultimate edition or normal?
No, just normal.
Fucking loser. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast, episode 246, our post-Christmas hangover episode, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a bunch of reviews today, and we're doing something different with these. Instead of reading a whole bunch of reviews from people who've written reviews for us, they're just going to do the reviews with me on the show. How's that sound?
Way better.
Yeah, you're not going to be here for any of those.
That's fine. I didn't know that they were happening.
Yeah.
I was told yesterday.
Yeah. Henry Jones is going to be on. Chris Taylor is going to be on. Eternal Rage is going to be on. Wood, Ryan Underwood is going to be on. Might have two other people if their schedules work out and I could record something with them in the next day. If not, we'll see.
Jesus, there's a lot of written reviews.
A lot of people do reviews for us.
SML
is a growing empire.
I just don't remember reading that many reviews on like one show.
Oh, well, we normally don't, like, we spread them around and whatnot, but I figured with all the games being covered and the Christmas rush, you know, they just add up.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Yeah, Henry gave his opinion on Feist as well. He wasn't as hard on it as you were. But
did he still not enjoy it that much?
He gave it a mild try it.
All right, fair enough. See, so it's not like he completely disagreed. He's just like, yeah.
He said there's a lot of potential there, and like the mood and the visuals are great. That just, like you said, the gameplay just felt kind of lacking. So,
well, I'm glad to see I'm not the only one that felt that way.
Yeah. Speaking of games not getting positive receptions, I'm actually kind of bummed at the general reception of Crypt of the Serpent King.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually really bummed. Like, I've been defending it when I've seen people shitting on it. Like, I would actually post in the forum saying, like, it's only $3.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
come on.
People are, like, destroying this game, expecting it to be up to the quality of, like, $20 indie games.
Exactly. And it's like, the only complaint that I totally, like, 100% agree with is the jumping is awful.
Yeah.
Like, the jumping is terrible, and it really only increases the difficulty because of that.
And like, honestly, the more I play it, the more frustrated I'm getting with the jumping.
Yeah, the jumping becomes really... Oh, I have good news about that, though. I'm now past level 4 on every difficulty, so I no longer have to worry about that.
Nice.
I no longer have to deal with... Because level 4 is the only one that really causes the problem. Every level beyond that is pretty easy, too.
Well, you'll still have hard difficulty.
No, I mean, I've done hard difficulty up through level 5.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
Wow.
The only reason I haven't finished it is because I'm saving it for 2017 for the completion challenge that I'm competing in, which is different from the challenge we're doing. But.
Uh-huh. By the way, when are we getting approved? Like, when is our team getting verified?
The team gets verified. Normally, they get verified at the beginning of the, like, when the competition's about to start.
Because I saw a bunch were verified, but we weren't.
Yeah, a lot of those that are verified have been teams that were in the past. So it's just the same team.
So, yeah, if anyone out there is a fan of True Achievements, SML Podcast is going to be represented in the True Achievement...
The GTASC, yeah, the Great True Achievement Score Challenge
2017.
Yep, because it's a yearly thing and it lasts all year, but we're probably not going to last that long. Because you're eliminated if you don't get enough score within that week. Like, they eliminate like a percentage of the teams.
And,
but, hey.
In true SML self-deprecating fashion, the name of our team is the SML Podcast Will Lose This Contest.
Yeah, but you can follow our team if you're interested
in
seeing how we do. Yeah, once the competition starts, you can actually follow teams. to see how they do.
Wow.
Like, if you go to their team.
And we're actually, like, a fairly decently SML-represented team, because it's me and you who are actually on the show. No Pulse, who's doing reviews for us all the time. Eternal Rage, who does reviews for us. And Shiz Blacka, who has been on a few times, and we
friend of the show.
Shit on him on the show all the time for how much he's a scrub at everything.
Yep. And our image, just in case you're curious, is of Horse Racing 2016.
Fuck yeah.
They finally fixed the glitch, so I could switch the image from my gamer picture.
Sweet.
So we're representing horse racing fans all around the world.
Nice. Well, how about we just dive into things with our great post-Christmas hangover review episode 2016 HD remix or whatever.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because we got a lot to cover today. There's games like Guilty Gear, Exerd, Surgeon Simulator, Experience Reality, Eternal Rage covered Wick. There's just tons of stuff to cover. And we're going to kick things off with you with the game Astroneer, developed and published by System Era. It released December 16th on Xbox One Game Preview for $19.99 and is also an Xbox Play Anywhere title, which is neat.
Yeah, that's neat.
Explore and reshape distant worlds. Astroneer is set during a 25th century gold rush where players must explore the frontiers of outer space, risking their lives and resources in harsh environments for the chance of striking it rich. On this adventure, a player's most useful tool is their ability to shape the world, altering the terrain and extracting valuable resources from planets and moons. CJ, what'd you think?
Oh. I'm a little surprised you're starting with me because we have a lot of things to cover. Now I'm going to listen to a lot, but in a row. But anyway, Astroneer is a third-person adventure survival game where the goal is what you make it. There is no true goal to the game, but rather you're free to just do whatever you want after a certain point. At first, you will have to make just basic survival necessities, mainly just a lot of tethers so that you can further explore your world with a constant source of oxygen. You can also build off your base, which is just your pod that you land on, and you can build multiple stations like a research one, trade, or printer station, and there's more. The big problem right now with the game is simply the lack of the tutorial or any sort of direction. I feel like it would really be helpful if the game taught you the basics at least. I'm sure there will be a tutorial implemented later, but in my personal opinion, I feel like it should be somewhat of a priority so it opens doors up to new players that may have otherwise given up on the game. I know, yeah. I wasted like an hour running around and dying from the lack of oxygen before eventually looking up a beginner's guide online. If it wasn't for the fact that I was reviewing this game, I probably would have gave up right here. So,
makes sense.
I mean, I get it is very early in the game, but a tutorial is absolutely necessary for this one. And it doesn't feel like there's that many stability problems. So I feel like this should be a new priority.
So and it might it be. Seems like the game itself is pretty stable. It's just feature lacking right now.
Yeah. The game's controls are a bit weird on console, mainly due to the camera needing to switch modes depending on when you're using your land transformer or not. While not using it, your camera works like normal. You just use the right stick to move the camera. But while using the land transformer, the camera switches into a mode that follows the cursor of the tool, meaning that in order to move the camera, you actually have to move your cursor over to the edge of the screen. It really isn't a problem. It's just odd. It's something that you got to get used to because you actually have like two different camera modes. The backpack and crafting system in the game is a little odd as well, but easy to learn. Basically, when you press Y, you open up your backpack, and you have 8 slots to fill with elements you collect. These elements are used to craft things, and at the bottom of the backpack is a crafting menu. It isn't too complicated due to the fact that there isn't too many things to make, and when scrolling through, you'll see exactly what you need in order to craft that item. The challenge is finding the elements you need, and elements are just scattered around the randomly generated world, and you have to collect them by sucking them up with your land transformer. The game looks beautiful. It's very open and colorful, and the sandstorms look great. Speaking of which, the first time I was hit by a sandstorm, I was completely blown away. not intended. It was not a pun intended. But I really didn't expect anything like that. Like, some feature like this really just blew me away to see that this was actually in the game this early. In fact, I was even killed by it because a block flew into my head from the extreme wind. And when you die, you just go back to your pod and respawn. It really isn't that detrimental. You lose what you had in your inventory, which sucks. But yeah, besides that, nothing else really occurs from it. The saving thing can be a little weird in the main menu. The fact that you have to go back in your pod to save, I thought. But then when I just quit out by mistake, I found out that it had saved the game anyway. So I don't know if there's any purpose in going into your pod besides maybe making sure you save in case the game crashes. But if you just quit to the main menu, it saves. But accessing your saves can be a little weird, because the main menu basically is just two directions that you can hit with a cursor or launch. And then you can select between four different astronauts. But what I didn't know is that there was these other slots that were kind of like transparent, and those are your actual saves. I didn't understand that scrolling over to those is what loaded your save. So I was like, where the hell is my save? I thought I just lost everything. So I wound up starting like three worlds before I eventually figured it out, which annoyed me a little bit.
Dumbass.
Overall, I'd say watch this game and give it a fair shot with the 1 hour demo. Personally, I don't think 1 hour is long enough to learn the game, but you can try it.
Yeah, you at least get some hands-on time with it to see, you know, if it's the style of game that you would be into playing.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that will really draw away players right now is just the fact that there's no idea. You don't start with any idea. Like, I actually had to look up a beginner's guide to figure out what the hell the point of the game was.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a lot of the
survival games that are out there that just drops you in the world, and it's like, go.
Yeah, it's very much like that. Very much like that.
Sounds good. I'm going to have to check that one out. I grabbed the demo myself. It has co-op, right?
I do know it does, but I have no idea how to access it. Like I said, the main menu is very weird. I don't know how to play it.
Well, maybe one of these days, if I grab the full game, we'll give the co-op a try.
That'd be fun.
But definitely sounds like something to keep our eyes on.
Indeed.
All right, next game to talk about is called Acorn Assault Rodent Revolution, developed by Hytale Studios, published by Black Shell Media. It will release January 11th on the Xbox One for $9.99, so we got an early look at this. It released last March on Steam to presently sitting at very positive reviews. Acorn Assault is a quirky, tail-bobbing, turn-based strategy game. Raise an army, overthrow a tyrant king, and save the oppressed squirrels in the Rodent Revolution. Hone your skills in single player, then duke it out with players around the globe in online multiplayer. This is a really, really interesting game. All the previews and trailers I saw of it, I expected the turn-based strategy game, but it plays a lot like a puzzle game as well. And how that works is each team is basically on a 6x6 grid. And every turn, you place items down. You could place either, like, barrels or sandbags as defensive items, or you could place your squirrels that, you know, are your attackers. When you place three of the same items next to each other, wherever you place the third one, the other two will join into it, and it'll be an upgraded version. So if you have three barrels, they'll turn into one single sandbag. If you have three sandbags, it'll turn into a wooden barricade.
Oh, interesting.
Likewise, you first start with the squirrels, who just have fairly weak shots. Mix three of them together, and you get, like, a soldier who has a more powerful shot. Three of the soldiers turn into a bomber, where you fucking light and roll a bomb across to the other side. And clearly it gets more powerful, you know, as you go. Every time that you link three things together, you gain 50 gold per item merged. So three of them will give you 150 gold. If you link up four of them, you'll get 200, but you don't get, like, a stronger version, like in Puzzle Quest or something. If you match four or five, you'll get, you know, a more powerful attack or a bonus or something. With this, you just get extra money, which could be helpful, but you don't get, like, an extra powerful trooper or anything like that. There are also occasionally, like, gold piles that you'll see on the map that if you drop either a troop or, a barrel or whatever on top of it, you collect that money. And the money comes into play after all of your items are placed. because once they're placed, that's where they are. You don't get to move your troops around. So there's
all right.
There's a lot of strategery required by by figuring out where you want things in relation to, you know, where your items are, where your defensive placements are, where your opponent's defensive placements are, and where their enemies are. And you have to decide, do you want to try taking out the defenses and taking out their soldiers, or would you rather put your troops where they don't have anything and just shoot the base behind it? Because the goal is to destroy the opponent's base. You can destroy their characters as much as you want, but, you know, you have to get their base down to zero hit points to win the round. It doesn't matter how many, you know, you could deliver the killing blow with one person and they can have 10 characters on the field. And if you destroy their base, it's game over.
Interesting.
Yeah. God, where the hell was I? I just lost my train of thought explaining shit. It seems fairly easy enough once you get started and once you learn the basics of it, but very quickly it feels like the game is stacking the deck against you. When you start off, you know, in the later stages, you have nothing on your side at all. You know, you might have an obstacle that you got to work around. You don't have any kind of soldiers on field. You don't have any kind of defensive items on field. You get to go first, but you only start with like three things, whether that's two soldiers and one defensive item or two defensive items and one soldier. It's, you know, luck of the draw, but you only get to start with that little bit. While most of the time your opponent has like four barricades up, four soldiers up, like the deck is stacked against you.
Seems difficult. Can you ever have just like three defensive items?
No, it's usually, you know, two and three, three and two, or when you start off two and one, it's never going to be just soldiers or just defensive items.
All right.
Although there's been plenty of times where I need some soldiers, and it's like, here's three barrels and two soldiers. Good luck doing anything with this. So, and in a lot of the battles, I just feel like I'm fighting an uphill struggle where, you know, I can drop two soldiers and three barrels, and their turn, they'll find a way to make all these matches, get tons of money, and then use their boosts to just destroy everything I just put down, which sucks.
Wow.
Yeah, there's so many rounds where I'm just like, how the fuck am I supposed to beat this? And, you know, every now and then you'll get lucky and you'll figure, you know, they'll make a mistake somewhere. It just feels like I hate feeling like I'm struggling to try and win. Like, it should come down more to, you know, skill and where I'm placing things than them starting with a giant lead.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Especially, you know, once in the beginning, it kind of makes sense because you're an oppressed squirrel and a tax collector's coming to tax you, and you're finally standing up against them and against the guards and whatnot. By the time the second stage rolls around and you're trying to storm the castle, it's like you've marched on and you're collecting your troops and, you know, villagers are following you. And it's like you start with nothing. All these people are following you, but you don't start with shit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's I hate feeling like games are stacked against me, which is a bummer. I mentioned buying boosts. The money that you collect during the rounds, once all your items have been placed, before the attack phase, you can use your money to either boost your attack, boost your defenses, or regain health for your base. Each thing costs 200 gold to use, so, you know, you can spend 200 gold to make your characters, like, double their strength or whatever else. And you can have up to four tiers of each, depending on how much money that you've saved, because you could stockpile as much as you want, you know, unless you're playing against the tax collector who fucking steals your money every turn.
Oh, wow, that sucks.
not all of it, but, you know, it starts off where he'll take 50 and then he'll take 100. And then the final round against him is like he'll take 150 gold each turn.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
So, that's a lot of money.
It is. Like I said, it feels like the deck is just stacked against you. But yeah, the achievement wise, it seems like a really, really easy completion as long as you can get through the game. 500 points of it are dedicated to just beating the five chapters and campaign. Which
actually, that seems like the rarest too. Beating the campaign.
They are, because again, the game is just, it feels brutally unfair in some fights. And then the others are like, you know, boost your attack four times in one round, or boost your defense four times in one round, you know, boost your health four times in one round. One is to win the game, like win the battle that you're in, having more than 1,000 gold left.
All right.
So there's just a lot of easy miscellaneous ones. I think achievement collectors are going to enjoy this game just for some fairly quick achievement points. And then it comes down to if you can get through the campaign, which it's pretty tough. It's not easy, that's for sure. I wish the game was a bit more fair.
Yeah, I could definitely see that complaint.
As it stands for $10, I still think it's worth a try. I love the mix of turn-based strategy with the puzzle game aspect of knowing where to place your items, setting it up so that you can mix things. And kind of like in Gems of War or Puzzle Quest, if you set something down, you can get these chains where three things merge and then they're next to two other ones and those three merge. It's just, it's cool to get those big combos and get a lot of money and then do a big ass four-tier attack assault and destroy everything they got if you can get that far in the match.
Yeah.
The addition of online is really cool. I haven't dabbled that much with it because I'm struggling to get through the campaign the way it is. But I think it's cool to see online included in a game like this. I hope that they put out some form of patch or update to either address the difficulty and just the general unfairness of the game, or, you know, add difficulty settings or something. Because I really want to get through this game and complete the campaign. It just feels like the game doesn't want me to do it.
Yeah, I could that seems a little unfair with some of that stuff. But hey, you're playing as a squirrel. Which is
true. Cool. And it's cute, and the humor is good, too. A lot of Monty Python references, which I like. So yeah, try it. It comes out January 11th, so check that one out when it comes out. And hopefully they'll make it a bit easier in time. I don't want to steamroll the game. I just want it to feel like I have a shot.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called Surgeon Simulator Experience Reality, developed and published by Bossa Studios, released December 3rd on the PlayStation VR for $19.99. It is also available on the Oculus and the Vive. Surgeon Simulator Experience Reality transports you into some of the most unlikely and unsanitary surgeries possible, where you can perform all of your favorite procedures from the critically acclaimed original, now with your own two hands. And joining me for this one is my very own nurse wife, Ashley. Hi, hun.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
So you're a nurse, huh?
I am, in the actual operating room.
So you kind of know what the hell you're doing with surgeries and...
Well, not the brain transplant, because that's not real.
So anyway, you spent time with this game. What do you think so far?
It was a lot of fun, but it was extremely frustrating, especially the eyeball transplant.
So for those who don't know what the game is, explain what the game is.
Well, you're basically a surgeon, and you're ripping and tearing and giving transplants to people who are going to die after your transplant anyways.
And like most of those quote-unquote simulator games, like Goat Simulator, it is one of those games where it's somewhat intentionally frustrating and glitchy and shit like that, yes?
It is. I'm sorry. It's hard to concentrate. The phone is ringing on it. It's probably another telemarketer in the game.
Probably should have muted the TV, huh?
Probably.
So, what all do you do in the game?
Well, you do things like break some sternums, rip out the ribs, cut out the intestines. Sometimes you just reach your hand in and a lung comes out. You can live with only one. It's okay.
I know I played this game originally on PS4, the original version. This game is pretty insane. It's just... it's not overly gory. It's just weird.
I played the original game, too, and I had a really hard time playing that one. This one was so much better. And
because now, thanks to the magic of VR, you are virtually there. You are using the Move controllers as your actual hands and really doing the things, huh?
That is true.
Were you getting all up in the bodies?
I definitely was. I was smacking them in the face, too.
I gotta say, I don't think I've ever laughed this hard watching you play a game.
It was fun to smack them and yell, "Wake up, James! We're gonna save your life!
Not gonna die, damn you!" So, yeah, what are your thoughts? Is this something that you could see yourself playing a lot more?
Oh my god, yes. Even if it is frustrating, I'm gonna transplant both of those eyeballs before he dies.
How realistic is the game?
Somewhat. The kidney transplant... You have to cut at, like, the cecum and the jejunum, which I know you guys don't know what that is, but that's okay. I mean, not that you would cut that to get it out, but that's how you move the intestines to get down to the kidneys.
I just appreciate the fact that while you're playing it, you're using, like, actual nursing and medical terminology to explain, like, oh, my God, this thing is here, and I'm... I'm just sitting here like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I don't know what to say. I just know what it is.
So if you were reviewing this game for a VR owner, a new PlayStation VR owner who's got $20 in their pocket, what do you think?
Hell yeah, it is totally worth $20. I would probably even pay for this game. And by probably, I mean definitely.
Sounds good. So do you have any final thoughts on the game? Anything that you want to get out there to our audience?
Make sure you do drugs, kids. In the game, I mean.
And real life, I guess.
Meh.
All right, next game to talk about is called Wick, developed and published by Hellbent Games, which I guess makes sense for a horror game. Released December 21st on the Xbox One for $9.99. It was previously available on the PS4 and Steam. Wick is a survival horror game where ghost stories are brought to life. Explore a local legend about the long-lost children in the woods who can still be seen, but only by those who dare enter alone by candlelight. Deep in the darkness, you sense you are not alone, but will you live to tell the story? I don't know, but Eternal Rage does. So Cole, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm not dead, so we're gonna roll with that, and it's a good thing.
Sounds good. So you covered Wick for us, and what are your thoughts?
I really like Wick. It's like Emily wants to play Crank to 11.
Oh, nice.
So let's go full-fledged, and I'll tell you all the nice things that I have to say about it.
Bring it on. I'm ready.
Hellbent Games thinks to bring urban legends to life with their first-person survival horror title, Wick. Players take control of a teenage protagonist who has been blindfolded and led to the woods by a group of friends. On their way to the woods, the friends discuss an urban legend involving a fire at a homestead located there. The remains of two adults were found in the ash following the fire, but the family's five children were never located. Rumor had it that the children disappeared into the woods, and the local townspeople would leave items out for the children in case they were still alive out in the wilderness. Some left burning candles, only to find the next day that they had been moved around overnight. Once abandoned by his friends, the player's blindfold is removed and the clock starts ticking. Each half hour that the player survives is marked by the ring of a bell, and each new hour brings with it another terrifying child to escape. While the game's mechanics are similar to what we've seen with other survival horror titles like Emily Wants to Play, where the player must follow a set of rules in order to escape each child, Wick adds an additional element beyond jump scares that occur at specific times and locations throughout the game's world to provide horrific details from the story. Scattered about the wooded homestead are the aforementioned candles left by well-meaning locals, and the player is tasked with keeping those candles lit in order to keep the protagonist's fear level down. The darker it gets, the more fear that is present, and the more aggressive the children become. Each candle has a limited lifespan, but searching the horizon for a flickering light can help direct the player to a new candle. In addition to the candles, the player has access to matches, but only 6 per hour, so use them wisely.
Oh, God.
You run out quickly. The light provided by the matches is not as bright as the candles, and it does not last as long, which puts the player at an increased risk of encountering more aggressive ghosts. One candle can be lit with another to save the matches, however. Hellbent Games throws in some nice visual touches with the matches and candles, including the player shielding the flame from wind while running. While sensory deprivation and limited resources are a good starting point for survival horror games, the real test comes in how the developers execute the audio. The unsettling rustle of the breeze through the dried leaves, an inexplicable shuffling sound as a ghostly child creeps up behind, or a well-timed screech from a jump scare go a long way in providing a chilling experience, and Wick executes this incredibly well. Audio cues are vital to the player's survival in Wick, warning them that they are being followed by the ever-so-creepy Tim, or alerting them to the danger of waking a snoring Benny. Wick features
just
two possible...
Tim? That doesn't seem very scary.
I know, it doesn't sound scary. They're all like Tim, Tom, Benny. They will fuck your face off. They will just straight up... Like, they don't even do anything in the regards when, and Emily wants to play, they jump up and you see their teeth and stuff. No, these kids will just straight up punch you in the face and rip you. That's that.
Nice.
Have a nice day or night, as case may be. Anyway, Wick features two possible endings and an additional mode relating to the events that occurred 1 year before the original game. For $9.99, given all the extras that it has and how well it's executed, buy it.
Nice. What kind of extras are in the game?
The extra game modes are there. Those were not available in the Steam version until they were added as DLC. So Xbox One players get that right out the door.
Nice. So it's like the two. It's the waiting bonus, I guess.
Yeah, we had to wait for it. So here you go. It's kind of like what Rocket League did. We had to wait for I told you a dog was going to bark.
Yes. That was like a little yip.
It was. It was one of the babies. But we had to wait. So we get everything good right out of the door. So for $9.99, if you like survival horror and you miss this, you're not hurting anybody but yourself.
Nice. Sounds good. Sounds pretty enjoyable. Sounds like I'm gonna shit myself in fear.
I legitimately had chills going up my spine while playing. Like I was playing and I just put the controller down. And went nope, not now, nope. And so, I had to take a break.
So is it among the most scary game that you've played on Xbox One so far? What's the scariest you've played?
The scariest I've played.
On Xbox One.
It's definitely one of the most unsettling.
Ooh, so it's more just like disturbing than scary.
Because it rattles you because you like, oh, you know there's going to be jump scares. Well, Emily was the same way. Oh, you know there's going to be a jump scare. But the fact that it's just these creepy little children and you can see them at times just running alongside you. And
oh,
it's just,
fuck that.
You're just like, oh, please go the fuck away. Please go the fuck away.
Oh, my God.
That's where it gets really just like it will send chills down your spine. Legitimately.
Now I'm kind of like scared to get it.
You see, I hadn't. Whenever you tell me I'm going to be doing a horror game, I don't look up anything about it. I go into it blind. And so like. The very beginning when it starts with like the police reports and oh, this is what happens and it's just a game. It's no big deal. And you're like, that's not ever how this plays out. It's not going to be just a game and everybody's going to be okay at the end. We're going to cry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever works, right?
Yeah, it is definitely a good one.
Sounds good. Well, if
you want to, you know, like I said, get some Depends or something before you play, though, or otherwise you're going to have some laundry to do.
All right, sounds good. Do you have any final notes on the game?
Don't blame me if you have to do laundry, because I told you to buy Depends.
All right, next up to talk about is a three-pack of PS4 racing games. Figure we'll just do a nice big block of them. And joining me for these, Pernell Vaughn is back on the show. Pernell, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, sir?
Doing good. How was your Christmas?
Pretty solid. I tried to sleep in, but that wasn't happening. Kids next door got a lot of toys, which is bad for old men like myself.
Goddamn kids, get off my lawn.
Yes, pretty much. Get off of my lawn. Don't need your Barbie race car in my front of my house. But we did, you know, I did go have dinner with family. I surprised my nephew with a cool present. And a copy of Wild Guns Reloaded showed up, like, on Christmas Eve. So I had that around. Though
I saw that. I'm jealous. That game looks so good.
It does. But, of course, I didn't play it yet because I had a duty. Duty fulfilled.
Duty.
Games.
So let us kick things off with Aquamoto Racing Utopia, developed and published by Zordix AB. It released November 30th on the PS4 and Steam for $29.99, and they say an Xbox release is planned. Aquamoto Racing Utopia lets you race through both big and small waves and make death-defying stunts to get that much-needed boost that lets you pass your friends on the final stretch. A fun-packed racer with interactive waves, split-screen, and online racing. Pernell, what did you think of this game?
Well, before I go into all these reviews, I just want to point out one specific component of this concept here, which is that I like the fact that since I've been reviewing games for your show, I've gotten exposed to a number of games that I would not have been able to, I would not have even known existed because they fall under the big publisher radar, I would like to say.
Yeah.
This being one of those games. But I can tell you right now, that led me to believe that I was going to walk in going, maybe it's okay. I mean, maybe it just wants to be, you know, like Wave Race or something. But here's what happened. I came away enjoying this game a lot. I actually booted it up a little bit more this morning prior to the review, telling myself I just want to give it a little bit more time just to make sure I have my opinion down. And I went through like another two cups.
Nice.
It's a fun game. A good way to describe it would be, like I said, I think the last Wave Race game that we had was Wave Race Blue Storm on the GameCube.
Yeah.
And the other Wave Racing style game was Jet Moto on the PlayStation, which was even prior to that. So we've been kind of without jet ski stunt-based racing for a very long time. So long that a lot of people don't even remember that it exists anymore. Well, guess what? This game is here, and it's letting you know it's back in style, and it is a lot of fun. Before I go on to the good stuff, I like to get the negatives out of the way so that we can actually get the juicy stuff more attention.
Sounds good.
The unfortunate component of this game is that I'm guessing it's related to mostly due to like, the studio style and whatnot, but it was very personality light, I like to say. And what I mean by that is character races are a big thing, largely because you can kind of grow a bit of attachment to the character that you're using or the character that you're racing against, as in, like, think of F-Zero, you know who Captain Falcon is, you know Samurai Goro, blah, blah, blah. So this game offers a customization option for your character, but it's pretty much a series of, tall, short, the generic style of throw a character together to get them on the jet ski and get them rolling. So I made like a, ipso facto guy and didn't have much, investment in it. And same with my opponents. It was just more like, just some guy who's got first place. I won first place. Give it to me. there was no more attachment than that. And in addition to that, the music in the game, it's serviceable. Like, it's not bad. It's not good. It gets the job done. You don't need to turn the music down to enjoy the game. But you're not going to be humming it when you're done playing it either.
Yeah.
And for me, music is a big part of games when I play them that I like. So that was a hit for me. But onto the good stuff. There's a lot of content in this game. There is a basic racing mode, which is going around a course trying to go first place, and you're at the same time you have to also get around buoys by passing them either on the left or the right in order to remain qualified to finish the race. If you miss three buoys while you're racing, you're out of the race and you're disqualified. In addition to that, there is also another component where when you do pass those buoys, you also get boost, like a little bit of a push to a turbo meter that the game puts in the corner. And the closer you pass the buoy, the greater the increase in your turbo. And when it maxes out, you can hit the X button for a huge boost of speed that'll pretty much let you chop through some waves. Now, in addition to using the buoys to get speed boosts, you could also implement tricks in the game. And what that would be is L2 is a hop button, which you use to kind of leap slightly off of a wave. And while you're in the air, you can hit the right thumbstick in different directions to pull off things like can-can and moto air. I think a number of different like tricks that the game actually gives you an instruction sheet on how to perform. And in addition to those tricks, there's also ramp-style tricks where you can do like 360s and do spins and all kinds of cool stuff to get your meter up in style and get that race flowing. Also, and look, that's similar to, I guess I would say, wave race, which I thought was kind of funny because I was reading, I said I want to lead into this. I was looking through some other reviewers, like through like some YouTube vids and stuff, and I saw a guy make a comment. And he said, this game lacks a lot of the control stylings that Wave Race had. And a guy followed up on that comment saying, you know, I thanks, man. I'm sorry. I just don't want this game because I was expecting more. As far as I'm concerned, that commenter is wrong. Like, I don't know what he was looking for, but this game has everything that Wave Race had as far as gameplay performance to the point where I don't know what he was hoping to find. Like, if you remember correctly, you could hold forward on the thumbstick to kind of lean into your jet ski to kind of get a boost of speed and chop through the waves. This game has that. You can lean back on the thumbstick to kind of lean up and catch a wave and go up to get a higher boost on the jump. This game has that. In fact, I pretty much played it exactly like I would have played Wave Race, and I did just fine. I had all the controls down almost instantly because of that. There are 10 different courses. And of those courses, there is a variety of actual builds on the course. So one might be an indoor dome, and it's a very small pool. So it's more so meant for tight turns and quick laps. But there are multiple configurations to that, which would involve buoy placement, wave size, and choppiness, basically.
Yeah.
And also obstacles, too. Sometimes they'll throw more obstacles in the water to give you trouble. Like, there's a lot going on with this game that I think makes it very much worth a person's time. It has unlockable jet skis that you can get by collecting money that's strewn across the course, as well as through getting stunts done on a course, which translates to money when you finish a race. You can get all that money, and each CC course, ECC class rather, has unlockable jet skis with different stats that tie into a number of things such as speed, acceleration, stunt, you know, handling, turning. It's pretty good. And even the races have different criteria as well. So that goes into things like, see, wave size, passage space, as far as like how many narrow passages the race have, how tight are the corners, and also how many opportunities for stunts do you get. So they give you the tools not only to customize how you want to tackle a track, but it also gives you the tools to know what kind of track you will be racing on. So if you want to either practice a certain style of, you know, gameplay, or if you want to race with your friends and say, I want to have a race that primarily involves jumps and stunts, well, there you go. The game will tell you what tracks you should be picking.
Right. Do you think there's enough content in the game to warrant the $30 price tag? Because I know a lot of people might see a $30 price tag on what's essentially an indie game, and they might be like, I don't know if I want to drop that much.
I can understand you on that, my friend. Trust me, I'm in that camp as well. And here's my response to that. That depends on how a person feels about the whole physical digital bit. If you are okay with the fact this game is only a digital release, it has tons of content to it. Again, it has 10 different courses. There are multiple cups strewn across three modes. Being there's like a ski division, the freestyle division, and the roundabout division. And each one involves its own set of course structure and whatnot. And in fact, I would go so far as to say you get more content from this game than you got originally in Bluestone. Ravers Booster. So you get a lot of content in this product. The only thing you have to be able to get past is the things I mentioned earlier. The lack of physical content, or the physical edition, the music, and again, music is subjective. They might think the music is spectacular. I don't know. And the lack of character personality, which for some people also may not be a big thing. The meat and potatoes of the game being playing the game, driving, riding a jet ski, doing stunts, passing the opposition, collecting money on the course. That is all there in spades. There's even course variety. Like there's not only is there variety, but the course variety takes some emphasis or some inspiration from the wave race games. But then there's other courses that kind of do their own thing that wave race just didn't even have. So, like, you have your offshore oil rig course, you have a bayou course, you have a beach course, a city course, you have an indoor dome course, there's an ice course. There's a number of, there's 10 different ones. It's a pretty awesome product. I think the content is there. As long as a person is willing to put the money down, it's there for them to play. I think it's worth it.
Nice. So it feels like substance over style in this one. Like there's a lot of stuff there. It just lacking a bit of personality.
Exactly. That's a very good way to put it. Substance over style.
All right. Sounds good. Let's tackle the other two games quick before we make verdicts on everything. The next one up is called Drive, 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 developed by Different Cloth and published by Choice Provisions. This released December 13th on the PS4 and Steam for $19.99. Drive, Drive, Drive is a racing game unlike any other, where players must drive their cars to victory across multiple tracks at the same time. You're able to switch between the different tracks of a race anytime you like. When you switch away from the track, a computer racer takes over driving on that track for you. Unfortunately, the AI racers aren't what you would call competent. In other words, to place well in every track you're racing on, you're going to have to hop track to track on a regular basis to account for the subversely cretinous computer cars. I enjoyed this game. I had a split opinion with this one and the next one where I thought this one was a super polished game. I just wasn't a fan of the handling of the cars in Drive, Drive, Drive.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same opinion as you are there, though I do just kind of randomly want to put out that I thought it was funny that the in-game menus and tip bars pretty much describe the car, the AI, as absolutely stupid. Don't even hold back. Like, the AI is stupid, don't trust it.
Yeah.
So at least they kind of let you know.
I think it's a really cool concept where there's multiple races going on and you have to place well in all of them to get, you know, gold medals on each of the courses. But if you let the computer drive too long, he's just going to fuck your world up.
Yep. And honestly, I would say that there are ways around that to play it as best as you can. Like, I guess the first way to go into this is we should talk about the different game modes that exist, because they give you a variety of ways to drive, and I'm not even sure if I've come across all of them. Like, there was the purest mode, which was placing well on all the tracks in general. So first place, first place, first place, and they would do a totaling of how you placed on all the tracks, and the lower score wins.
Yeah.
Like the lower the score, the better off you did.
It's like, so you would need, like, a total of 6 to get a gold, and that's, like, you could get 2-2-2 or 1-1-4 or 1-2-3. As long as you didn't add up to more than 6, you could get your gold.
Yep, which then leads you to like a type of strategy style where you're thinking, okay, I'm doing really well on this track. The lower guy is not doing so hot, but is he doing so badly that I need to really leave this track behind to make up the difference? And you'll be doing that a number of times, because I think by the end when I had stopped playing, I had reached a point where I was racing on 4 tracks at once.
Yeah.
So it got pretty nutty. There was also an arcade mode, but that one involved you getting points not just from your positions, but also by
smashing into other people, drifts, jumps, stuff like that. And I love the fact that a lot of the courses, they could kind of overlap a bit. So if you're jumping on the one track, you could slam into cars that are jumping from a different track.
And that has happened to me before. It was that one track that had, like, it was like a donut, like 2 donuts, and they kind of met in the middle.
Yeah.
Or rather, more like a figure eight, I guess. But it was pretty awesome, I thought, doing that track. But that one was a fun one. And unlike the previous one that we mentioned where the points were, you know, based solely on your position, so the numbers were low, these are score-based ones. So we're talking 20,000 points here, 30,000 points there, that style of score.
Yeah, so, you know, your placement gets you a lot of points, but you don't necessarily need to place first in everything.
Exactly. And that, I thought, honestly, I was enjoying that mode a fair bit.
Yeah. I think that was my favorite as well. And then there was also the orb collecting one where there's a handful of orbs placed on the tracks. And a lot of times they're staggered between the tracks where, like, there's going to be a stretch of orbs on this one, but nothing on the other. And only the first person to collect the orb gets the point for it. So you got to try staying ahead of the other cars to collect those orbs on each track.
Yeah, I found that one to be the most puzzle-like of all the modes in the game because of what you just described. As I was racing across the different tracks, I was realizing that I was switching to tracks to try to get a better placement in segments where there were no orbs to be collected, which means I was wasting my time down there. So it became a practice of learning where all the orbs were across all the tracks that you were involved in and switching at just the right time and doing basically getting a good flow between each segment of orbs so that you're ready to collect them when it's that time.
Yeah.
It can get pretty frantic, but it was enjoyable too.
Yeah. Overall, I really, really enjoyed the concept of Drive, 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 the style. I love the minimalist visuals, the electronic music. It's just a lot of style to it. Really fleshed out, really well-made game. I just don't like the car handling. It's way, way, way too tight, where if you nudge in a direction, you might do a donut.
Yeah. Actually, by the end of it, though, I was getting a lot better with it. Like, it didn't bother me as much. At first, I think that's where we almost differ. Like, I honestly didn't like the minimalist style, but it grew on me as I played. Like, there was a track where each time you switched between the track, there was a different, they had a different color style to them. Like, one was magenta, one was blue, one was purple.
Mm-hmm.
And the cars kind of matched that as well. And that, to me, that was when I was like, okay, now this minimalist style is starting to click for me because they still add some pizzazz here and there without going overboard so they can accommodate for what the, you know, what the gameplay requires. Because too much style in that game would have probably made it overwhelming when you're switching between the tracks. But the handling, I got better with as I played. Like, it didn't hurt. It didn't bother me so much. Though,
yeah, but when you first start, it's pretty jarring how tight those, you know, the handling is on those vehicles.
It really is. It really is. Just got to really stick with it and just kind of know that this is one of those games where the brake is not just a cosmetic button. You have to use it and you have to actually take turns like you don't want to die.
Yeah.
Especially when you start getting into the tracks where they actually cut the barriers off the sides of the walls. So.
You go fucking flying off the edge. I would find that if I would go flying off an edge, I would just switch to another track and then worry about that one later.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that one. At that point, it's like, well, shit, I just got to make up for it over here. Though I am thankful for the fact that when you do fall off the track or you crash out or whatever, the game doesn't take too long putting you back in.
Yeah.
Because I guess it knows that you are definitely vying for dealing with issues between multiple tracks, so you're bound to screw up here and there.
Yeah.
So to give it a heavy penalty for falling off the track would be kind of, you know, would be defeating. Like, you wouldn't really want to deal with it so much. So they're kind of generous about that, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah. Overall, I dig the game. I hope that they release some kind of sensitivity options for the handling.
Yeah, I can dig that. And I'm in the same boat with you. I definitely agree with this game. I did like this game. Though, unlike the wave racing game, I would give this a try. Oh, I guess you said you want to hold off.
Yeah, we're going to do just a bulk review and then something a little different at the end. But so for now, we'll jump on to Motor Strike Immortal Legends. This one is developed and published by 5X Games. This one released December 15th on the PS4 for $19.99. A new action racing experience. Compete against your friends in a frenzied battle that mixes action and driving as you've never seen before. This is kind of the flip side of Drive, 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 where I felt the game isn't as polished. It feels fairly rough around the edges, but the vehicle handling, I thought, was really well done.
Yeah, I have to say, it was a very weird feeling for me with this game. I came away from Drive, 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 you know, having played that and going, okay, the minimalist, you know, we talked about earlier about how I didn't feel the minimalist style was the usual style that I look for, whereas Motor Strike was very colorful. The cars all had personalities and the like, which I said was lacking in the racing in the Aquamoto. Mm-hmm. So I was ready to go. I was ready to jump on this game. And it's like you said, it was very – the driving drove me insane. Like you said on the last game where if you tap a little over to tap over a little too hard, you'll go into a donut. Mm-hmm. I felt that way about this game. Like,
did you?
There were like I got used to it. I got a lot better with it by the end. But as I started to unlock some of the later tracks in the game, it got to the point where it became very frustrating for me. Though I will say they have a mechanic, that hook mechanic.
Yeah.
Which allows you to grab the track, sort of like a grappling hook, and it pulls you onto it. However, while I think it's a really cool gameplay mechanic, there was a huge part of me that felt like the hook was being used to accommodate for the fact that the driving was so frustrating.
Because I felt the driving, like handling-wise, turning-wise, was actually a lot easier to deal with than in Drive, Drive, Drive. I think it was just the physics of the game that led to a lot of issues of like the cars just like flying off the track weird. I think that's why I said this one felt rough around the edges, where it just feels like the physics aren't completely there. Like collision detection is lacking in some areas. You might like hit, you know, a tree on the side of the road and go flying up in the air.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Actually, now that you mention it, I think that may have been more the issue I was experiencing as well, because to give you an idea, there was a point where I was driving, and it could have well been like a one rocket shot in the back that did it, but I got killed by, it felt like nothing. Like I was driving, it was like, just dead. I'm like, why that guy didn't hit anything?
On the one course, I actually think there is like a dead area where if you drive on the one corner of the road, it detects you as out of bounds for some reason, because I blew up in the same exact spot on pretty much every lap.
It drove me nuts. I'm like, why am I dying here? Like, I didn't understand it. It was that one track where you can kind of see it curve and then it kind of coasts down the lower left side of the screen.
Yeah, so, same one. It's like right before the big U-turn near the end. There's like
the one
to the right side of the road.
Yep, that's where it was.
I think there's a boundary issue on that track because I blew up in the same spot every time.
I'm glad it wasn't just me then.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, there was like, when I first started playing the game, it was like you would hit the side of the road. And in most racing games, if you hit the side of the road, you'll scratch paint, you'll take damage. You know, you might even have to fix, you know, correct your handling a bit. But in this game, if you hit the side of the road, your car goes into a flipping air tailspin.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, if you can keep the car on the road, you're moving, you're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
But when the moment you take a hit, you go flying. You're pretty much hugging that hook button for dear life, trying to recorrect yourself. Though, one thing we should probably point out, though, now before we forget, because we're talking about handling and stuff, is how the game itself functions. And that this does not play like a typical racing game of any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, there's not much of a campaign to it.
Yeah, there's no campaign. It's just sets of races, which you complete to earn credits to buy more campaign races, basically series of four races. And you also use that money to buy new weaponry and also to buy new cars, which are all sort of theme-based. Like there's like a Batman-style car and there's a Ghostbuster-style car. Like
rigs and vans.
Huh?
Big rigs and vans.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like the cars do have tons of personality to them. And you use all the money you do earn from these courses to buy those things. But the way you win this money is that you don't actually place in races. In fact, they're not actually races at all, except for like one aspect of earning points, which is you get a course and the goal is to just reach a certain point threshold before the other team. And this is done in a variety of ways. One way is to reach checkpoints prior to the other players. The faster you get to the checkpoint, the more points you earn for reaching that checkpoint. Another way to earn points is to, quite frankly, inflict motor strike on the opposition.
Blow the shit out of your opponents.
That's right. Make them squeal. Basically, I'll hit them with rockets. You can condense like a super weapon that each car gets. Some get like a missile strike. I've seen cars that get the more defensive structure, which is that their car will shrink down and they'll take less damage when the attacks hit them. So it's pretty much meant more so for the car that's in front than the car that's in the back. So that's pretty much what you're doing for the entirety of the game. You're staying on the course, hitting those checkpoints and blowing everybody up in hopes that your team gets the score, a higher score than the other team. And after each round, because there's four rounds typically on each set of courses, after each round, based on how your team did, you can earn a bonus. And based on that placement, you get to select first, second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. One of the six bonuses that the game makes available to you. That could be things like more health or more
stronger weapons, extra, you know, speed, or just various boosts.
Yeah, they come in handy too, though. I think I'm mainly stuck with the speed because I wanted to stay ahead of the pack and not be a part of that madness.
Yeah.
So, and also worth pointing out, we mentioned earlier how you get points by blowing up the opposition. So you might be asking yourself, what if this is like Mario Kart? What happens when I'm in the front of the pack and there's nothing to blow up? Well, funny thing, you benefit better in that regard by being in the front, because the game actually creates dud cars that drive out in front of you that you can blow up easier than other cars, like man-made, man-controlled cars, to get more points. And there's also a giant tank I've come across that's worth a ton of points.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's way up in front. So if you're in the back, you'll never see this vehicle. So it's worth it to try to stay in front of the pack. So, of course, if you're unable to do that and you're in the back, it might be good to have a car with a missile strike. You kind of just throws in a wave of fury. So, but this game was an interesting one to me because I like the concept. I like the styling of it. But maybe it's just me. But did you feel like the gameplay got old pretty quickly?
I was going to say, I felt the game was very grindy. Like, it took way too long to get enough points to start unlocking things. And it didn't change things up that much. I did want to dabble. The game does have online. I was unable to find a game. And when I checked the online leaderboards, there were two other people.
Holy cat.
Yeah. So I'm worried that they spent the time and the effort to implement online into this game, but people aren't going to be there because I think they priced it too high.
If online is a weird thing in and of itself, though, when you think about it, because in this day and age, we have more video games at our disposal than we've ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those games have online play to the point that if you're not a big budget release, you're likely to suffer from a lack of online players.
Yeah.
That may not necessarily be like a blemish on the game itself. It's just pretty much a depiction of the market that we have right now. Though I do agree with you in the sense that if they put this much effort into online and people aren't using it, that is pretty frustrating for them.
Yeah. So this leads me to the ratings for everything, because in my eyes, all three of them are a try it for different reasons. Like Aquamoto Racing, solid game, lots of content, but it doesn't have much personality. And I think the price is a smidge high. Drive, Drive, Drive. A lot of content, great style, but the handling is weird. And I'm kind of, you know, wondering if the price might be a bit high for that one as well. But, you know, they're all kind of around the same. And then Motor Strike Immortal Legends has the style and decent handling, but it's very rough around the edges. And again, I think the price is a bit too high. So overall, in my eyes, they're all try-its for different reasons. I'm not sure if you're kind of in the same mindset, although I think you might give Aquamoto a buy it.
Yeah, that's pretty much where we're going with this too. For me, Aquamoto is a buy it only in the as long as you want a wave racing game. If you want wave racing and you miss Wave Race Blue Storm and you miss Jet Moto, I would say buy this game. The price is a bit steep, but let's be honest here. You know sales are going to happen. Sales always happen. So if you don't want to pay full price, you can still get it on sale. But if you want it right now, grab it at full price. But I think that the game provides plenty of content. And as long as you're jonesing for that style of gameplay and you don't care about the lack of Akari Hayami, you know, all the different names they have from like snowboard racing, I mean, like 1080 snowboarding and whatnot, you won't care about that. And you'll still enjoy it, quite frankly. Because even I started getting into it. Eventually, I started losing. I started caring less about the lack of character and just caring more about placing on the swamp level as best I could. So,
but
however,
I figure since we're kind of in the same mindset of they all have their pluses and minuses, and aside from Aquamoto, I would assume you think the other two are a try it as well, of varying degrees.
Try for different reasons. Yeah, like drive. It's an awesome process, awesome concept, one that I've never seen done before.
Yeah.
And visually, it's a throwback to virtual racing in that respect, as far as the minimalist approach goes. But at the same time, the try it for me comes in regards to the aspect of having to actually juggle multiple courses. Some people might not have it to actually have that, you know, state of mind to manage 3-4 tracks at once. And that's okay. But if someone wants that newness, that style of difference, the try it will make it definitely shift it to a buy.
Yeah.
So, and the other game, as far as like the Motor Strike, I feel that's a try it in the sense that I don't want to outright say the game is a bad game, because the things that were bugging me about it are not things that everyone would find bad about it.
It has a lot of soul and personality to it. Like, you could tell people who made this game, I think they still have things to learn about development and physics and collision and everything else, but they give a shit about this game. There's a lot of love and personality in this game.
Yes, there was. The one thing I'd like to point out for them, if they ever in the event that they actually end up listening to our show and are talking about it, I feel like one thing that they seem to have dropped the ball on with this game was when you go to the garage to buy a car, because that's where you go to look at the cars you've unlocked and to buy new ones, they show you the stats for cars, you know, handling, you know, difficulty of driving, et cetera, et cetera. However, when you go into the game racing mode and you want to actually play, they don't show the car stats when you're picking a car.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of odd there. But, I mean, I liked reading about the different descriptions. Like, there was, like, the car called the Hasselhoff, which made me laugh. It was, you know, and like, I liked that. And there was a ton of personality in the game. The race level, the actual individual races, the different maps had, you know, different characteristics to them. Like, there's a, you know, different, like gates like Chinatown. And there was also, like, on one of the ice levels, there was, it seemed like a, like, either, like, something like a, either an oil rig or a nuclear plant. I couldn't quite tell, but it was definitely mechanical. I was too busy trying not to die there. But, the personality was definitely there. It's just a matter of, you know, that you mentioned earlier, the collision is a thing that could be concerning. So they definitely want to, people who are kind of touchy about that sort of thing, they definitely would like to have to do the try it aspect first.
Nice. So since they're all, you know, they all have their pluses and minuses and they're all kind of try its in the long run, I figured we would do something different of, for these three games, fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, really? Well, I guess technically that's not hard for me to do already. It surprised me, admittedly, but I already have an answer. I'm not bad at this. You go first, though, since you proposed the idea.
Mary, I'm going to give to Aquamoto Racing, because I think that's a game that you could spend a lot of... You could spend a lifetime with Aquamoto Racing.
Mm-hmm.
To fuck, I would fuck Drive, because that seems like something that you would have, like, a fun couple of nights with. But there's just... You know, there's not enough there to keep you around forever. In Moto Strike, I'm going to have to kill just because there's a bit too many issues with it. But I would love to see a sequel after they flesh out the problems and you know, because they have a great idea behind it and a lot of care and attention to style and everything else. But it's just... It's not up to the other two. So I would marry Aquamoto, fuck Drive, and kill Motor Strike.
And it's kind of funny because I think I'm pretty much in the same bubble. Like, I would definitely marry Jet Moto because there's tons of content there. And I'd be interested in seeing how much more I can unlock. Because, again, there's a lot of boats to unlock. And there's a fair number of courses to play around with to unlock them. And, of course, and there's also just playing with the waves in general. Like, you'll be doing a lot with that game. I'd fuck Drive. Because the concept is pretty cool and unique, and I can see myself having a lot of fun times with it. There's going to be that point where you hit the wall, and you're like, I just can't deal with this anymore. Like,
This bitch is crazy. This bitch is crazy.
This is some cray-cray shit. I can't do this, man. I got to go. Yeah, girl, I'm sick. I'm not feeling so hot tonight. Sorry. Yeah, that's definitely how I'm feeling about Drive in that regard. It'll be fun for a while, but either I'll hit a wall due to difficulty, or I may just as well lose interest in the sense due to the minimalism style and whatnot. And, of course, Kill would likely be Motor Strike, again, because I want them to go back to the drawing board and make it a better game. Because I would definitely give it a sequel a try.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to giving it another go. I like the idea of the hook mechanic, and they could do a lot more with it. Heck, heaven forbid, they can make shortcuts that rely on the hook.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome. But I didn't like the fact that the hook felt more like a remedy for bad problems than as a gameplay mechanic, if that makes any sense. Like, I want them to do better with it because the concept is there. It is totally there. Battle racing, when's the last time we've even seen that? You look at games like Mario Kart, they've already gotten rid of it. They're practically getting rid of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I would love to see this game do it. In fact, I'll go one step further, you know, because listeners are probably thinking I'm ragging on the game, but I'll go one step further. I feel like there's something to this. You played Mario Kart 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
You saw what they did to Battle Mode.
Yeah.
They ruined Battle Mode.
Yeah, they did.
But with this game, if it had the Mario Kart polish, but used the mechanics that they put into it, it would have been fine. I would have played that battle mode in Mario Kart 8, whereas the battle mode in Mario Kart 8 can suck a dick. Like, there's something seriously good there. They just have to touch it up and bring it back out. I would definitely give it another shot.
All right. Sounds good. So that is the three racing games. Parnell, do you have any final thoughts on everything?
No, I'm honestly just glad that I did them because – it's like I mentioned at the beginning of the recording, there is something to be said about reviewing indie games of this level because we live in an age now, especially as we're all getting older, that time is a hot commodity and the press is putting out, you know, they're pretty much blocking out press on games like these where there's personality to them. People worked hard to make them, but all you're getting hit with is the Dishonored 2s and the Assassin's Creed's, and these are the hot games of the year for X consoles. No one talks about these because they don't get any love or attention.
And but that's why I like doing this show, because I like to cover the stuff that other people aren't really giving much attention to.
I agree. Like, now I have Jet Aquamoto. I would have never known about that game, nor would I have played it if you didn't say, hey, Punk, can you review this game for us? I like the game, and I'm going to play more of it. And this is the kind of thing that people need access to. They need exposure to these games so that we can get out of this glut of sequelitis and this sense that people like to say games lack charm now. They're all just, you know, bottom feeding for cash income, for cash earnings. Like, no, they're not. It's just that you're not seeing the games that are still doing what you want them to do. So those are pretty much my final thoughts. I'm just glad I get to review these kinds of games and get to talk about how I feel about them and let people know you need to buy this game. Cause now I'm going to tell people to buy Jet Aquamoto right now. I'm in for that.
Well said. All right. Next group of games. I am joined by our good friend, Henry Jones. Henry, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm just trying to get through Christmas. I have to work through Christmas Eve cause I work at a TV station, and when everybody's on vacation, everybody wants to watch TV. So somebody's got to be there to keep it on.
Good times. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Well, you covered two games for our show. One, we had one of our, one of the co-hosts, CJ, he covered the game initially, and then we had you with a second opinion on this, and that's Feist, developed and published by Bits and Beasts. It released December 13th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99, a desperate, savage survival experience full of stunning visuals, dynamic creatures, and a haunting soundtrack. CJ didn't seem like that big of a fan of it. What did you think?
I'm not that big a fan of it either. I'm willing to go, you know, light on it because this is two guys essentially at the core development. When I looked at the credits, like, oh, this is one of those where it's two guys and the rest are just like people who came in for like little bits of help. And of course the person who did the music. The thing is the broad experience is fine. It is a smoothly running game. I mean, the graphics, what this game does is it reminds you of a lot of other games, and that's yeah, blessing and a curse, because it's like, oh, I, because the graphics are shadows like Limbo, where you can see some detail on it, but it's mostly black and sometimes a little bit red, depending on if you get hurt or certain parts of the game.
Yeah.
And then the rest is like, you know, beautiful backdrops or in shadows. And then there's some like very atmospheric music.
I think CJ was comparing the visuals more to Badland than Limbo. Oh, I'm not sure if you played Badland.
I have not played Badland.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah, he seemed to love the whole aesthetics, the visuals, and the soundtrack. He just wasn't a fan of the actual gameplay behind it.
Yeah, the gameplay is a little bit off. I mean, part of it is intended. It is meant to not have patterns, and it's meant to be... The AI is meant to have random behaviors. So you can't just memorize their patterns and get through it, which sometimes, you know, it's nice that there's more than one approach to, you're this little guy and you're chasing after another little guy who's been captured by these giant troll creatures. And eventually the bosses of some chapters are the troll creatures and you have to stop them. And there's more than one way to get around them. I mean, mostly you're just going to be panicking and throwing shit at them and hope they die. But there's usually more than one way around. And that's, again, a blessing and a curse, because I get really frustrated when there's only one way and I can't figure it out because my stupid monkey brain isn't connecting the dots.
Is it monkey brain or old man brain?
Oh, yes. My 34-year-old old man brain.
Hey, my 35-year-old old man brain is kind of dying, so you never know.
But and then there's some things when there is kind of one solution and you're just, it's not obvious. There's a chapter called Trespassing where you're in this cave and there's spiders chasing after you and there's all sorts of other things, and they don't make the solutions obvious. And it takes you forever, took me forever to figure out. And I got through it. It took me about 2 hours. This is the part that took me so long to finish the game because I got stuck and I just shut it off and played Let It Die for a while. But eventually I got there. And then I got, the very next thing is the suspension bridge. And, oh, you know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to hop on it. And then when it flips up, you jump on where it flips up and then you jump to the platform. Well, when you jump on it, it doesn't move very much. I mean, if... at all. And then I had to look at the walkthrough online. It was the one time I ever had to look through the walkthrough to see how exactly they did it. And the walkthrough written down was a little bit weird. So I went to the Let's Play, which was, it was either a Swiss or a French guy. He had a very thick accent and sweared a lot.
Oh, so it was like this show.
Something like that.
Fuck yeah.
So I found exactly the way to do it and moved on. And then the game, the rest of the game was like 20 minutes of, you know, sometimes frustration, sometimes not. But the broad gameplay is fine. It runs smoothly. The gameplay, it isn't precise. It's not meant to be. It's meant for you to, you know, react to what's going on instead of paying attention to patterns. And it works well enough. The thing is, it lacks certain intangibles. Like I compared it to Limbo. Like games like Limbo give you like some emotional hooks or some, you know, there's something where you feel something. Like when you get the spider, it's like, oh shit, it's the damn spider, and it's, or something. Yeah. Or there's some, usually these things attach feelings like we're going to make you cry. This one doesn't. It's a basic platformer and the ending lasts 5 seconds and then off it goes to the credits. So it doesn't, it reminds me of a bunch of games, but what it kind of wants me to do is it makes me want to play those games because it reminds me of how fun they are, or, you know, how they made me feel. And this one, you know, it's pretty. The music is really good. I mean, really good, but it doesn't make me feel anything. It's like my, it also kind of reminded me of Eco in a way. I mean, you don't have this person following you, and it's obviously a 2D platformer, but it kind of has that same solemn minimalistic music, and you're being tracked by shadows and stuff like that. But, you know, that definitely makes you cry. And this, it's there. I wouldn't say it's a bad game. It just, it's not something that made me, you know, feel any attachment for it. It's just kind of a play it and forget it. I mean,
yeah. So what's your overall verdict on it?
It's a very mild try it.
Hey, it's better than what CJ said. CJ was like, I hate saying it, but he gave it a deny it. But you know, that's why it's good to have multiple opinions sometimes.
Yeah. Also I'm a little bit easier on it because it's two guys. And when I think of the shit I made in college when it was just two guys, yeah. It's just like, oh yeah, there's, I am in a movie on YouTube. Don't ever try to find it.
Now so, I want to see it.
You don't. The original cut was 2.5 hours, and it's just like my family wanted to support me while watching it, but they eventually wandered off and did other things when I tried to show it to them. It's just like, I don't blame them.
That's like every episode of the show. People make it like an hour in, and they're like, "Yeah, I think I'm good."
Okay. So place me before that hour, would you?
Sounds good. I did want to point out, because you mentioned the spider in Limbo. I think Limbo was the most effective demo I have ever played of a game, because the first time I played it on 360, you know, I grabbed the demo to see what it was like, and it goes up until the spider captures you and wraps you up, and then it's like, demo's over, bye to continue on. And I'm like, motherfucker, here's $10. Let me keep.
Yeah.
That's such a good demo.
Yeah, there are no moments like that in Feist, unfortunately. It's pretty straightforward.
I still want to try it out because I think it looks really good.
It looks fantastic. The music is good. It sets the mood, and that's all it does, but it's still pretty good.
All right. Sounds good. Next game that you covered for us is called Kill All Zombies, or hashtag Kill All Zombies, depends on how you want to handle it. Developed and published by Beat Shapers, released on December 6th for the PS Vita, for $4.99. It was actually, I believe, published on the Vita by SPL. Kill All Zombies is thrusting civilians into a fight of survival against the unleashed population of ravenous zombies, and you are the only one who is destined to repulse them. What'd you think of this one?
It's a little weird. Did you play the Big Brother ones, like the console ones?
Yeah, we covered it on Xbox One previously.
Okay, good. Maybe you can give me a different view, because I looked at the graphics for the console ones, and this feels like it was a Game Boy port of a console game. And it doesn't look nearly as bad, because obviously we have more colors than green and whatever the back, whatever the outline.
Green and dark green.
Yeah. So, but it is a somewhat different game from what I have seen from the trailers on Steam and from what I can gather from the pictures, because there are cars that have your points and your medical stuff. And then when you go to the Vita version, excuse me, there are crates that get dropped on you, and there's no co-op, and there's none of this going onto Twitch and then they say things and mess around with the board or anything like that.
Yeah, I kind of figured the online integration would be gone from the Vita version.
Once again, it is a very broad game down, but it is very stripped down and is very basic. It is a twin shooter style where, you know, you one stick controls you and the other one, you know, you shoot around at all the zombies, and for what they did, it was pretty good. It's very responsive, very fast. I played similar games like this. I mean, this reminds me of Smash TV, especially with how hard it gets within about 10 minutes. But I lost my train of thought here. I'm sorry. ADHD is a bitch.
I think one of the big things to keep in mind between the console and the Vita version is that the Vita version is $5 where the console is $12. So you're paying less than half of the price for just a, it seems like not too much has been removed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the graphics are a little lower quality. You don't have co-op play, and there are slight differences, and you only have just survival mode and tower defense mode. And if anybody questions my authority on the game, I am the number one tower defender in the world right now on the Vita version.
Granted, that's yeah, you awesome. Sent me the picture, and I was like, holy shit, is this for real?
This is for real. This is like on Xbox One when one night I was just dazed and can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was dazed and I don't know, I just wanted to play X-Men on the Xbox, and then I just play those spots where you can mine points for because they just keep dropping enemies over and over again. And on the Japanese normal difficulty, I am the number 3 point scorer in the world on X-Men Arcade. So I just got into a zone, and then boom, there it is.
Nice.
But
that's
but
funny.
Anyway, you just have survival mode, and you have tower defense mode, and you go around shooting a bunch of zombies, and you level up, so you get perks. And what the perks do is they're randomized. And you can either get a timed bonus or you can get a permanent bonus. And permanent bonus is faster reloading and your health can slowly replenish. Or you can get like really big bonuses, like you can get an extremely good gun for a limited amount of time, or you can just freeze all the zombies for a limited amount of time so they're not all jumping on you at once. And then you have the luck ones, which there's a 50-50 chance you die. But if you die, but if you don't die, you get a whole bunch of experience points. Or there's the, you get a whole bunch of experience points, but you die. So sometimes this allows you to think out of the box for getting through the game. Because there's an auto revive option perk. And you can pick the 500,000 experience points and die. And then you can come back and then... holy crap, you have these all these perks. And the thing with the perks is you choose when to activate them, which is very important. Because you don't want to use your early perks like right when you're just... there's 4 or 5 zombies coming at you and you just blast them. So you get to... so I like that about it. You can control when you use your perks. Don't you wait too long because otherwise they will eat your flesh. And then... it's, you know, the strategy of picking out when to use your perks. And
I'm so glad I'm not the only person who uses strategy on this show.
Well, I just use it sometimes when my head eats words and I need a word.
Strategy.
And part of it is luck. A big part of this game is luck. It is that you get the right perk at the right time, because I have been surrounded by zombies. I'm like, I need something. I need a bigger gun. And it's just like, would you like to use the flare gun? No, I don't want to use the fucking flare gun.
Fucking flare
what
gun.
Other crap do you got? And once you select a perk, you have to pick one of the 4 they give you.
Yeah.
So, but
so if there's shit you don't want, you're stuck with whatever shit you don't want that they give you.
Yeah. I am 200 million points behind the people in survival mode, probably because they have probably figured out how to be invincible. And the big thing about survival mode is you have to take care of yourself. And, you know, your vault defending mode, you have to defend a giant vault that is easily hit. But by...
so you can't just find a corner and hide there, which I think is what people with massive scores have done in survival. I think there's like one of the maps, there's a corner that you could like wedge yourself into, mm-hmm. and then they can't get to you.
Okay. I haven't figured out that corner yet. I should probably do that. But, But the vault, there is no hiding. The vault is there, and you can put turrets to defend yourself. And if you're lucky, like I was really lucky one playthrough, you will get all the perks that are like, let's level up your turrets, which will give you a whole bunch of, yeah, I mean, your dinky turrets that you start off with, they're okay, but they run out of ammo very quickly, and their weapons aren't very strong. You level them up, and you get auto fast reload, and you get the perks that where, well, we'll give you enough money to buy another turret, and then you're in business, at least until the dog zombies come along. The dog zombies are extremely fast, do a lot of damage, and they are pretty much the barrier for anybody to get through the game. They're just like, oh, you're having too easy of a time. We'll stick the dog zombies on you. And then it's pretty much game over, at least from my experience. Because I surrounded my vault with extremely powered up turrets and with fast reload, and it's just like, they still took... I got through one round of the dog zombies, and then they mixed the dog zombies with the other regular zombies, and then it was just like, it's done.
Oh, God.
Because they are too fast, and they take an extra hit or two to go down, and then you just have this big, easily destroyed vault that once it dies, you die.
Nice. So overall, what do you think? $5. What's your verdict?
I mean, I try it. It's definitely, you know, not the superior version, but if you need a quick, portable zombie game to go on the road and you have a Vita and, you know, don't use it for Otaku Trash like I do because I'm Otaku Trash. I have Conception 2 downloaded on the hard drive right now. That proves it.
Nice. I mean, don't forget, if you want to invoke it, we do have a fourth rating. Instead of just buy it, try it, deny it, we also have fuck it, why not? That we reserve those for like the cheaper games. It's like, it's cheap, it's fun, fuck it, why not? Do you think this qualifies for that?
Sure, it's $5. Granted, I just went through an expensive move, so $5 for me is may not be the fuck it, why not that it is for everybody else. But, you know, if $5 is not a lot of money for you, sure. And you like zombie games and you're one of the 10 people who have a Vita, go for it.
Hey, I love my Vita. I shit on the PS4 all the time, but I love my Vita.
Oh, I love the Vita too. It is a great portable game. It is highly underrated, and it does a lot of things. I love that I can play my old PlayStation games on it. I love that there are some PS3 games I can get on it, and there's plenty of JRPGs I can play on it, which are things I like to play.
Very true.
Because I'm Dr. Trash.
Very true. Well, Henry, appreciate the two reviews. Do you have any final words about the games or about anything in general?
Not really. I am very exhausted, and I have got to get to work in about 20 minutes. So I got to slap on the old work stuff and then head over and make sure people get TV. And I should try not to say anything in my frustrated state that would get me fired.
Cool. So have a good one and don't get fired.
Will do.
All right, next game to talk about is called Bridge Constructor Playground, developed and published by JoinDots, released December 8th on the Wii U for $9.99. This game gives you the freedom to let your creative side run riot. Nothing is impossible. Across 30 innovative levels, you have to build bridges over deep valleys, canals, or rivers. In comparison to the number one hit Bridge Constructor, Bridge Constructor Playground offers an even easier entry to the game, including an extensive tutorial with no fixed budget and next to no limitations on materials. There are almost no limits. You can build and construct to your heart's desire. Our good friend Chris Taylor covered this one. And Chris, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. Little under the weather, but that's okay.
Hey, tis the season.
Yeah, exactly. Tis the season for severe head colds.
So I know in the past our show covered Bridge Constructor on the Xbox One, and then we recently also covered Bridge Constructor Stunts on the Xbox One, and now you're covering Bridge Constructor Playground on the Wii U. First off, I love the fact that the Wii U gets like the easy kids version of the game.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So what are your thoughts on this one?
Okay, well, I don't have the benefit of having played either of the other two, but I did look at them. And it appears to be what the difference is in the Playground chapter is just that. It basically, you know, when you start a stage, they just say, okay, do whatever you want as long as you can get these two cars or these two vans or, vans across the bridge. And it's basically you can build, like, just this insane, like, you know, sort of a Promethean-like structure that costs millions of dollars and will, you know, stand the test of time and nuclear war.
Yeah.
Or you can try and actually be more frugal and, you know, construct a good enough bridge with the limited resources. And for that, you get the medals at the end of the stage. And in fact, you need a certain amount of medals to proceed to the next stage. And if you just meet the bare requirements, that is to say, if you just go crazy for all the first stages, then you'll run out of progress about halfway through the game. So there is an aspect of having to actually play the game by some kind of rules.
Yeah, I hear you. Because I know on the, like, I didn't play stunts myself, but from what I could tell, it's basically the same bridge constructor theme, but more of a stunt style of, like, you know, driving off ramps and shit like that to cross the bridge. The original bridge constructor, they had those hard limits in place, and you had, you know, a set amount of money, and you had to build the structures and the bridges within that budget, and you couldn't go over it. So you had to, you know, figure out how you wanted to have things set up and how you want to design the bridge. And I know the financial limit made some of the stages fairly tough.
Yeah, it's really hard to meet all of the requirements. Like, it took me, I replayed, after I figured out what was kind of going on, I replayed all of the tutorial stages and tried to get every medal. And even on the easiest levels, I think I only got two of them where I got all five medals in the same go. Because it's, you know, for one, the way they rate them is that one of the medals you get for using a limited amount of supplies and it working somehow. I literally had the bridge collapse on me, but since the vans got over safely, they still gave me the award, which is fantastically fun to watch.
Nice.
It's like, here's my bridge, fellas, and then as they drive across, it like collapses and one of them barely makes it, and they're like, great job, you won. So there's that. And you know, with the minimum budget, if you make something that at least holds up long enough for two vehicles to go over it, then you get the medal. But then there's another medal which has a slightly higher budget, and you have to keep it underneath a certain stress level. So, all like, right. So you have a little more money, but if your bridge goes over 50% stress, then you don't get that particular award.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty much it as far as the awards go. It's like you always get the first two. As long as the two vans can go over, then automatically the cars are said to be able to go over. So I always pick the vans because they're heavier. Spent a lot of time experimenting on different structures and like what holds up better and what materials hold up better that are cheaper. So I actually, this game wound up being a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Nice. Yeah. I really enjoyed the original, especially once you finally figured out how to get like that tricky stage where you're like, well, the bridge is fine all through this part, but over here it turns red and then it breaks, and I don't know how to avoid that. And once you finally figure it out, it's so satisfying.
Oh, yeah. And then you, like, you know, you build up this whole thing and it just stays green the whole time. You're like, yeah, that's right. And, yeah, so I quite like that. And plus, it kind of made me nostalgic for things like Legos and Erector sets, which I had as a kid. Like, I loved Erector sets. Yeah. And I do like that the game actually forces you to think about physics.
Yeah, like you got to use your noggin.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's a little bit different than, I don't know, Mario Run or something.
So overall, what do you think for $10 on the Wii U?
For $10, I say if you really like building simulations, which I know those definitely have their fans. I love SimCity, for instance. Some people really like the Tycoon games and like stuff like that. For that set of gamers, I would say if you want something that's challenging but also forgiving, definitely give this one a try. It's the playground thing belies it. Like, you know, it's a playground, but you can still fall off the monkey bars. It's got some difficulty to it.
That's a nice analogy.
Oh, thank you.
Did you write that down? Did you plan that?
No. No, it's yours forever.
Wow, you just thought of that off the top of your head.
Well, that's what I said. I needed to revive myself with coffee. But I will say my only criticisms of the game, the most glaring one, it has almost zero soundtrack. Like, there's no stage music. There's no level select music. There's the victory music is just a chime. And it's like, I was like, come on, guys. Like, I could refer you to some friends of mine who can make you some video game music. Like, just get someone.
No, we could get Chris to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Get Chris Huber. You know, I would do it. I'm a little bit.
I never really considered the lack of soundtrack to be a negative in this game, but I could see where you're coming from. I never really thought about the lack of music because I was just focused on trying to figure out the stages. But yeah, I could see where you're coming from on that.
I mean, you know, it is a game that you can just sit there and play while watching a movie or something, especially with the Wii U pad. You could just turn off the TV or switch it to, you know, your Netflix or whatever. And just keep going on the pad. But I don't know, man. I'm a pretty big proponent of video game soundtracks. So
yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, right. So that's a slight negative to me. I really think they should get some music going for the next games that they're doing. And you know, again, if they need some composers, I can refer. So
very true.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that could use some work. So for $10, definitely go out and buy this game so that what is it? Join the dots.
Join dots, I think. Let me go back to my notes because I switched.
It's join dots. Yeah, I just saw. So join dots. You know, give them the $10 so that they have a budget for the next game to hire a video game composer. So
if for some reason you breeze through that version too quickly, you could always get the big boy versions on Xbox.
Right. Yeah, you could get the punishment ones. That stunt one actually looks really fun. So
yeah, even better. This is the fun little thing. Even better, if you were interested in getting a copy of the game on the Wii U, and you're in the U.S., North America, because unfortunately Nintendo region locks their codes, we do have some to give away. So keep an eye on our Twitter at the SML Podcast, and we'll have some info going on this week about it.
Hooray! Yes, do that.
So thanks again for doing the review. Do you have any final words or a final statement on things?
As far as the game goes, it's really fun, and I really enjoy playing it, and I'm going to play much more of it and try to get all the badges because that's the completionist that I am. The other thing, I guess personal plugs, I am now gaming on Twitch every week. So if you want to follow me at LiarExaggerate, I play Earthbound on Mondays until I finish that, and then I'm going to go through the whole Mother series and eventually play Undertale for the first time.
Nice.
And I play other games just intermittently throughout the week, usually between 8 p.m. and 10 Central.
Did you check out that Undertale Prescription for Sleep album yet?
I haven't even played Undertale, so I actually purposely avoid everything having to do with it. I was told that that's the best way to be if I want to sit there and cry at a video game.
Nice. Well, when you're done with Undertale, check out the Undertale, A Prescription for Sleep music from Scarlet Moon Records. Feel free to check out, I think, episode 244 was that one that Jason came on. I don't know. There's too many. So, yeah.
Well, I'll remember that when I go back and listen to this podcast and you know, cringe at how bad my voice is when I'm sick.
Yeah, you're crazy. No one listens to this.
Someone might listen.
Oh, God damn it. All right, next game to talk about is called Guilty Gear. You know, I'm not even going to try pronouncing it. Guilty Gear. What is it?
Exerd.
Exerd?
They actually say it in the announcement where, like, they say Guilty Gear Exerd.
Like, I saw it. It's like, what the fuck is up with these names?
Okay, so this is actually a pretty simple explanation, right? It's the reason why it's called Exerd, because it's the third in the X series of Guilty Gear. They just didn't want to go with Triple X, because they do have Double X. Yeah. So it's like, well, we can't do Triple X. Like, okay, how about the Exerd? And it's like, well, we're Japanese, so fuck it, we'll make it work.
Okay, so Guilty Gear Exerd Revelator, or Guilty Gear Exerd Dash Revelator Dash, developed and published by Arc System Works, released December 14th on Steam for $49.99, or in a deluxe edition for $64.99, also in a standard bundle with Guilty Gear Exerd Dash Sign Dash for $79.98, or the deluxe bundle with Guilty Gear Exerd Sign Big Burst Bundle for $104.98. And then there's like launch sales and whatever else. Astonishing 3D cell animations and overwhelming content volume. The next generation fighting game, Guilty Gear Exerd Revelator, is now out on Steam. Total cast of 23 unique characters and tons of game modes. Get ready to rock. As you already heard, our good friend Ryan Underwood is back to talk about this game. So, Wood, what do you think?
Well worth the price. Like
Exerd. Exerd, is it worth the X price?
Yes, it is worth the X price, and there's a lot of reasoning why I say that, right? We can go back and we can just like say like this game is bombastic. let's
put it out there. Well, it is like, a Guilty Gear game.
Okay, all right. So if you want to distill what makes Guilty Gear Guilty Gear, part of it is cool characters doing cool shit. Step one. Step two is a soundtrack that matches said cool shit.
Indeed.
Like, when it comes down to like fighting game soundtracks, let's say I think I wrote the guy's name down, but I now can't scroll in there. It's actually said this is a Daisuke Ishibatari. He's been doing the soundtracks for every single Guilty Gear game out there, and I think I said words because the soundtrack is fucking legendary. That's because it is.
Damn.
Yeah. If anything like that, that's going to be a selling point. It's like, hey, what's... Like, that's how you distill this game down, right? At least at the very surface level. Cool characters doing cool shit with an amazing soundtrack. For us, like, fighting game heads out there, this is possibly one of the best fighting game mechanics or fighting game systems out there. It's been, like, talked about a lot. But it's probably one of the more open-ended systems where, like, you can do stuff off any sort of scramble. And what I like about it is, like, let's say you're stuck in, like, a defensive proposition where you're just getting, like, a hammer with blows at this point. You have options. You have a lot of options under your belt. And it's something I dislike about Street Fighter, and I found this out, was you can get locked down and just, like, oh, cool, I'll just block and hopefully there's a gap I can break out of. And you're just stuck there. You can't do anything until you're done blocking. There's like four different blocks in this game. It's absurd. Like regular guard, perfect guard, instant guard.
So you were in heaven pretty much with all the mechanics and intricacies and weird Japanese names.
Yeah, there is. Like, it's like, oh yeah, Roman cancel. What is that? I don't know. Sounds cool, right? Right. I mean, this is a very Japanese game, but like, it's there's a reason why I kind of hesitate to call like an anime fighter, even though it straight up is an anime fighter. Like every anime game like has this game to thank for seeing a lot of its mechanics from, because it really does have a lot of it. Like this is where burst mages come from. This is where like freaking alpha or excuse me like Roman cancels come out of, right? This is the game series that started all that kind of stuff. But like it's the mechanics are like just. The mechanics of the game are solid. It looks fantastic, sounds fantastic, and even if you're not really big into fighting games, like let's say you're like, well, you know, I don't want to really learn a game, but it looks cool. Like, should I drop the money on it? I would still say yes, because single player is probably like the most amount of stuff that's in a single player game.
How much is there to do? Like, how? I'm guessing like campaign, arcade mode, training, challenges.
Okay. So let's break down just single player modes, right? So you have your story mode, quote unquote story mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Let's back this up. We have your basic arcade mode. You fight eight characters, and at the end of the eighth one, you get your respective character's ending for that one. What's cool about it is it is following a storyline. So this game takes place right after like the end of Sign. And so they're gearing up towards like what the next conflict is going on in the storyline. So you basically what your arcade mode is just like how it did at Sign. It's basically the arcade mode is your setup to the story. It's like, okay. All right, cool. Now I know what my character's set up with, and based on who I fought for the last boss, okay, that's where they play into it and why they're, you know, doing this kind of stuff. So it's just straight up arcade mode. That's good. Story mode. All right, this is how story mode works. You're watching anime, period. Right. like straight up, like it is a anime that is done using all the assets from the game.
Damn.
Yeah. So from a game standpoint, that's kind of dumb. But from like a technical, dude, they snuck an anime into this fighting game.
I know you said technical, but I heard tentacle, which would make sense in an anime game, I guess.
Well, it is anime, yeah. So. Thankfully, as far as I know, there isn't like a lot of tentacle stuff. And the reason is I feel bad because I haven't gone through that. It's actually the Guilty Gear Revelator, the anime, if you will, which is story mode, because it's long. Like, if it's as long as the Sign one, I want to say it took me like 2 hours to get through that.
Damn.
Yeah. But again, it is a technical marvel that...
It's a tentacle again, like, marvel.
It's... Jeez, man. A technical marvel that they stuck an anime into this game. You can just like sit down and it's like, oh, fuck it, I'll just watch this anime, right?
That's really cool.
It is cool. Don't expect like really don't expect good storytelling. It is still an anime.
True.
Right. It's a friend of mine laid some spoilers down, and it's like, as soon as he said that, I was like, yep, you find this, and I was like, yep, anime, gotcha, on it.
Nice.
Right. So, all right, and that's the story mode proper. After that is there's Medal of Millionaire mode, which is actually completely revised from what it used to be, which is basically like, oh, survivor mode, but you collect medals. Now this is a story mode or a survivor mode, but you're actually collecting items to improve your character to fight stronger opponents to get better items to improve your character to fight stronger opponents, right? So it's and the thing is, like, you don't. I played a little bit of it, and it's pretty interesting. But I didn't put too much time into it because, again, I'm more interested in the multiplayer stuff.
Yeah.
Because like it's that is reason why I picked it up.
So how is the multiplayer?
It's good. It's good. I did make a note in my notes that it's sadly like a lot of the anime fighting games I've been covering, they refuse to do are you familiar with like a rollback versus delay?
Yeah, you were telling us that in the last review of yours that you wrote in, I think.
Yep. So this does do a delay-based netcode, which is unfortunate. But at the same point, like, this is probably one of the best iterations of that type of netcode. Like, I was getting down to matches, even on my, like, what's the words I used? Doo-doo butter hotel connection. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. To be fair, like, we have put these games through the paces when it comes to the online play, because you were where? In Korea?
Yeah, that was in Korea.
And
yes.
And then you were in a bunch of like random hotels going to like fighting tournaments and all this other stuff. And now you're where? Germany?
Yeah.
So when you're trying to play against Americans, like, you are pushing this shit as hard as it could be pushed.
Yeah, I am. It's okay. So here's the thing, right? It's like, a good question is like, hey, what? Why are you so harsh on these netcodes? And real talk, it's because Killer Instinct exists. There is no better netcode than Killer Instinct. Period. That's the reason why, like, it's like everything else is like straight up a battle for second, right? Because like it's like no matter like it's just the nature of like how they bake that netcode right into the gameplay, and I think it's really unfair for me to expect everything else to follow that example, because you can't.
Yeah.
These anime fighting games, Guilty Gear is no exception to this. They're developing the arcades first. Then when they come to console, they bolt on a netcode. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's when I say this is probably the best iteration of it, I mean it. I was actually getting some really good connections, even from like my terrible hotel room. I was playing some sets.
Doo-doo butter hotel Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that fucking hotel life. Now I got internet, like at least cable internet here. The connections are still really good. It just feels like, because it's input based, you still have that, like, you still feel it. Like, it doesn't feel like you're playing, like, the guy is like right next to you.
Yeah.
Right. So you're always going to feel that. But at the same point, like, again, I have to say this is probably the best iteration of like this type of netcode, period. It's like it does feel good, and I do feel like I can get a lot of stuff done on it. And the cool part is you can actually see how much delay you're seeing in the game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, like it's in the top, like in the top corner, you actually see like 1 frame, 4 frames. Like at 4 frames, you actually do kind of feel it, and that's probably, I think 4 frames is actually the worst it got, so not bad.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of content, pretty good net code. What's your overall verdict for this? What do you think?
Buy it.
Nice.
Like it's okay. Caveat though. If you have the PS4 version and you already paid for the DLC, it's a little bit harder to recommend. But if you have a decent gaming laptop, dude, you got a portable setup now. Like
what,
for me,
what
like
do you think of the bundles? Should people check out the deluxe bundle? Should they check out the Sign Deluxe, Super Burst, whatever?
If you can get it a little bit cheaper, I would recommend that. Actually, one thing I forgot to mention about this, the tutorials in this is actually fantastic.
Nice.
Right. Although I think the Sign one is a little bit better, because the is a little bit hit or miss, right? The reason I say Sign's a little bit better is because it goes through all your mechanics, whereas this one only focuses on your offensive ones.
Mm.
And the defensive ones are like really important, like stuff like what's your commands to do Blitz Shield, what's your commands to do Perfect Guard, Instant Block, all the other stuff, right? Doesn't really go into it, but there is at least a mission mode that goes into the more advanced concepts, which is like fully on, like, actually I think it's much better done in this version. And as far as the tutorial in this one, they gamify it to the point where it's more like you're playing a platformer. Nice. So you're not just like beating up on a dummy. You're actually like, hey, get through this obstacle course. Like, hey, we're going to teach you how to dash. But in order to dash, you actually have to go through this obstacle course.
That's really cool. End.
Yeah. And that's actually pretty cool. So they actually do a little bit better job on that one. I wanted to make sure that makes it, because there's a lot of games out there that don't do that. Like, that was my huge gripe with Nitro Blasters was nice. Like it did nothing to tell you about any mechanics. This actually goes out of its way to make sure, like, hey man, there's a lot of mechanics to this. Let's teach you a few of them at least.
Just learn your shit before you dive in, because you will get wrecked if you don't.
Yeah, and that is a issue with this game, is with the, although it's actually very much open ended, it's also, there's a lot of nuance, like there's just a lot to learn.
Yeah.
So like you can actually like jump in and just like, oh god, I don't know what I'm doing. Like you jump right into the deep end if you just go straight online. So I mean that is an issue with this game, but at least it does it much better than, like, honestly, I think it does it a lot better than like any of the games I've reviewed so far. So nice. I mean, like this is an easy buy, like seriously. And as far as the bundles go, you don't need to have Sign. That's actually really hard to recommend, especially when the story mode itself. What you would get if you got the big bundle with Sign is its story mode, which is its own full anime. So you get the nuances in that one, but if you don't care about that too much, there's a recap at the beginning of the first story mode for Revelator.
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah, there's a recap. It's like, hey, here's the stuff that happened. Here's where we're at now. Here's the story. It's like, cool. That's awesome. So that's actually, you know, if you don't really care about the nuances about the story and Sign, you don't have to get into it. But they do. I mean, I would recommend a bundle at that point. But honestly, I would actually get the deluxe bundle for this one because it comes with all the DLC characters. There's three, I want to say. It's it comes with Raven like completely unlocked. Normally, you'd actually have to go through story mode, watch the whole thing to figure out who Raven is, and then like, oh, now you can play Raven now. Cool, thanks, game. But there's actually a couple of DLC characters. I think both Jam and Coom are, locked behind. So there's that. I would actually recommend getting the deluxe before. Oh, and the soundtrack, because it's good.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
god,
good.
Guilty Gear soundtracks are always good. So it sounds like a solid recommendation. Do you have any final notes to give on the game?
There are people hungry to try to get more players into the scene as far as competitive goes. So I would actually highly recommend like a nose up. And dude, there are people who are willing to teach you how to play this game if you want to get competitive at it. So and it's honestly, I think this is easier to get into than the previous Double X series, which is like Double X, Midnight, Reload, Accent Core Plus, AC. I don't know, dude. It went nuts.
There's so many.
Yeah, but it's honestly like it's there are a number of players who are willing to like sit down with you. It's like, yo, I'm really willing to play this game. It's like, dude, we'll teach you everything you want to know, man. So like it's like, yeah, dude, I can gush on about this game like so much. It's actually really good.
All right, sounds good, man.
Cool. Thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
So yeah, those are all the reviews for the week. Did you enjoy them, CJ?
I enjoyed every single
one. Shut up, you weren't here.
You
weren't here for any of
them.
You weren't here for any of them.
Well, I was here for two of them. One of them was my own.
Yeah, true. But yeah, that was, I think it was fun having all the people come on and do their own reviews, and maybe we'll try this again in the future sometime. We'll see how people enjoy the episode, if it feels better than just hearing us read out reviews all the time.
I hope so, because that sucks to read reviews. In fact, I don't even have to complain about it anymore, because I don't get to do them.
Yeah, because you fucking suck at reading.
Allowed. Only allowed.
Sure. Music this episode is, we are going to toss the final Christmas remixes that we have from all of our friends who've given us music this holiday. We have two songs from Dishu, some piano versions with sleigh bells added. We have a song from our friend Level 99, a.k.a. Steve O'Bortz, a massive song from Snappleman, Norg, and Finbeard, Norg being the guy who does our intro. Always good to have his music on. And then we're finally going to get to Chris's version of The Night Santa Went Crazy from Weird Al.
Oh, that's a shame he's not going to be here for the episode that he gets on.
Like he cares.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah, that's our episode for tonight. I hope everybody out there had a fantastic Christmas. We hope you got all the toys and treats that you wanted. The Steelers won, so I had a good Christmas.
Oh, Cavaliers won, so it was decent.
The Cavaliers did?
Yeah, we won by 1 point against Golden State.
Nifty. Golden State just can't get that last win, can they?
It's the only sport I actually even enjoy slightly is basketball.
Oh, man, that fucking Steelers-Ravens game. That was
pretty intense.
Holy shit, that had to be one of the best games of the year. It was exciting down to the very last second.
Really? Because I thought Shadow Warrior 2 was my game of the year.
Womp, womp. Dumbass. Yeah, Steelers got the go-ahead touchdown with 9 seconds left in the game.
Oh, nice.
And even then, like, I was sitting there for the last 9 seconds of, like, please don't let them score. Please don't let them score.
That would be really fucked up. Like, kickoff, and then immediately they just run the whole way.
Dude, in a Steelers-Ravens game, fucking anything can happen. So I'm sitting on the phone with my dad because he doesn't get NFL Network. So I'm, like, giving him play-by-play the last 2 minutes of the game. Because my dad's the reason that I'm into football and I'm a Steelers fan. So my dad's on there. He's like, how much time is left? 9 seconds, and they're up by 4. Okay, so they need to get a touchdown. 9 seconds. They could probably get, like, 2, 3, maybe 4 plays if they're quick enough because they have 2 timeouts. Man, we can't. It's not over yet. It's not over. So literally 4 seconds left for the final play. They throw an interception, and then my dad made the joke of, like, so the Steelers could still score again. Time's up. So game was over, but... Yeah, that was good. That was Steelers give me more anxiety than anything else in the world.
That reminds me of the game where everybody was leaving. I actually went to a football game for the Browns, and everybody was leaving the stadium at the very end because we were up by like 1 point or 2 points, but it was the other team's field goal attempt, and so everybody was like, "Well, they're gonna make it." It was like 30 yards. So I was like, they're gonna make it. So everybody's just leaving the arena, and then everybody turns around and hears they missed the field goal and the Browns win. that was an amazing game to be at.
Crazy shit happens in football. Anything can happen.
That's still I've only been to 2 football games, but that's a memory.
Nice. Good stuff. And the Browns won. They actually won this weekend.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that because I don't pay attention to football.
Their first win of the season.
Oh, wow. That's bad.
Yeah, especially because next week's the last game of the season against the Steelers. So.
Well, you know, it would be really sad for your team then.
Hey, we clinched our playoff spot today, so I don't give a shit.
It would still be kind of pathetic to lose to the worst team in the league, or at least one of the worst.
That I was making the joke that I'm glad they won this weekend because now they got it out of their system. We didn't have to be that team next weekend.
That's true.
But yeah.
I mean, even if we win next week, we're not going to move on.
No, a 2-14 record is still pretty bad.
Yeah.
You're going to miss the playoffs with that.
I don't care. I don't.
But yeah, good Christmas for everyone. Thanks for listening, as always. And keep your eyes peeled on our Twitter, because we're doing giveaways right now for Aerosmith Pack 3 in Rock Band 4 for the Xbox One and Bridge Constructor Stunts on the Wii U. So go check out our Twitter. Or not Stunts, Bridge Constructor Playground. Oh, okay, Playground on the Wii U. Shit.
That makes more sense. And you should also follow our GTASC team.
Yeah, follow them so you could see how quickly we lose.
I'm not going to lose that.
CJ, do you have any final words for the show?
Yeah, enjoy your new games you got.
Gentile boys, the boss busted in, nearly scared him half to death, had a rifle in his hands,
cheap whiskey on his breath, beer to his boots. He was covered with ammo, like a big, fat, drunk, disgruntled Yuletide Rambo. And he smiled out and said, with a twinkle in his eye, Merry Christmas to all, now you're all gonna die. The night Santa went crazy, the night Saint Nick went insane. Realized he was getting a raw deal, something finally must have stepped in his brain. Well, the workshop is gone now, he decided to bomb it. Everywhere you'll find pieces of Cupid and Comet. And he tied up his helpers, and he held the elves hostage. And he ground up poor Rudolph into reindeer sausage. He got Dancer and Prancer with an old German Luger. And he slashed up Dasher just like Freddy Krueger. And he picked up a flamethrower, and he barbecued Blitzen. And he took a big bite and said it tastes just like chicken. The night Santa went crazy, the night Kris Kringle went nuts. Now ya can hardly walk around the North Pole without stepping in reindeer guts. There's the National Guard and the FBI. There's a van from the eye with this news, and helicopters circling round in the sky. And the bullets are flying, the bodyguards rising, and everyone's dying to know, oh Santa, why? My, you used to be such a jolly guy. Yes, Virginia, now Santa Claus is dead. Some guy from the SWAT team blew a hole through his head. Yes, little friend, now that's his brains on the floor. I guess they won't have the fat guy to kick around anymore. But now there's no more presents for the children's enjoyment. And the elves have to wait in the line and file for unemployment. And they say Mrs. Claus, she's on the phone every night with a lawyer negotiating the movie rights. They're talking about the night Santa went crazy, the night Saint Nicholas whipped, broke his back for some milk and cookies. Sounds to me like he was tired of getting chipped. The night Santa went crazy, the night Saint Nick went insane. Realized he'd been getting a raw deal. Something finally must have snapped in his brain.
Thank you. Thank you.